And how can we live with this reality, these realities, in such a way that we become stronger rather than weaker? That our response is one of dignity and humility and effectiveness. One of the secrets, I think, is to, if you're going to open to the pain that lives in our hearts, that lives in our world, that lives in our lives, you must also, if you're going to be in balance, open to the joys and the possibilities and the inspirations and the spirit of goodness in each of us. You need to see the light in people and in yourself. You need to enjoy your life in others and find ways then of being creative. So I want now, if you would with me, to do a similar kind of process, only around things that inspire you. Greens, okay? Things that rejuvenate you, things that are happening, that are taking place in your community, in the world, in our lives, wherever, that are uplifting to you, that affirm your heart's purpose, that call you forward. This guy, your friend, right there. Good. Veg Fest. Art. Families. Love. Nature. Smiles. Service. Dancing. Veganism. Sex. Empathy. Music. I didn't get that one. Tofu. What was the thing? Some kind of friends?
Random friends.
Random friends. I've got some of those. Electric cars. Bicycles.
Smiles.
Bicycle power.
Portland.
Spiritual teachings. Musical instruments. Fruit.
The
stars.
T. Colin Campbell.
And you, and the person sitting in your chair. Thank you. Let's give us a hand. I want to recognize you. I want to appreciate you because the courage to be alive with all that's taking place is very meaningful to me. And when I see it in somebody, see it moving through their life, I feel blessed. I feel grateful. And I feel a little stronger than in meeting the challenges that I have in a good way. I want to tell you about one of the challenges I'm dealing with right now as an example of what I'm trying to talk about here. I've long been a home birth advocate. My son was born at home 33 years ago into my hands. I've written extensively about the potentials of natural childbirth, unmedicated childbirth, unmedicalized childbirth. And I'm actually a little bit abhorred by the cesarean rate. And the degree to which a very powerful, extraordinarily powerful, natural human event has been turned into a source of fear and pain and medical profit. I say that because when I live with my son, with my wife of 40 years, Dale, and our son, Ocean, who's 33, and his wife, Michelle, who's lived with us for 13 years, and their twins, our grand twins, who were born 6.5 years ago. And Michelle, my daughter in love, was planning a home water birth with twins. That's pretty unusual. It's brave. She was very informed, and we live not very far from a good hospital, so if there was a need to transport, that was available. And she was sort of in my lineage. She was wanting that type of a birth, and I loved that she wanted that and hoped that for her. But it's not the way it worked out. I know you know that sometimes things don't happen the way you hoped. I imagine that's true for you. It's true for a lot of us. And what happened was her waters broke and she went into labor very, very, very early. Almost 3 months early. And the result was a extremely premature birth for the twins. And they were born not really the size of my hand. And they couldn't breathe or suck or swallow on their own. They would not have survived without massive medical intervention. And so it was a different kind of birth than a natural home water birth. It was heavily medicalized. And they've had a lot of special needs. When they finally were allowed to come home from the intensive care unit where they spent the first months of their lives, the head of neonatology told us that there was a 25% chance they would be blind, a 25% chance that they would be deaf, and an 85% chance that they would have cerebral palsy. That was very painful to hear. By the way, they are not blind, they are not deaf, and they don't have CP. We were also told, I was told that day that, he told me that they would be touch-averse, that they were touch-averse, they would always be touch-averse, and we should not expect ourselves to overcome that in any way. We had to just live with, don't feel guilty about it, just accept it. I asked him what he meant by the phrase touch-averse exactly, and he said, they will experience human touch as painful and threatening. And he put his hand on my shoulder kind of patronizingly and said, you know, you'll learn to live with it. And inside my gut, I heard a voice that said, no way. And we went home, and I was motivated, though, by his attitude and his belief system. We were alerted, maybe, to the issue, and for the next year, for the next 12 months, each of the boys was in skin-to-skin contact with at least one of us 24 hours a day. They slept on us, they bit on us, and when we were exhausted, we traded off, and another one came in, and because there were four adults in the family, and they're not touch-averse. They're cuddly, they love to be held, they love to be flown around like airplanes, they just adore it. And I mention this because I think it's an example of something. I don't know quite what. I know I felt deeply challenged and continue to by some of the special needs they have. And exhausting. I mean, raising identical twin boys, dynamic boys, fully expressed boys, I'm sure is a handful and a half in any case. When they have a lot of special needs, it can be exhausting. But